Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You are now entering a critical thinking zone. Thinking caps are required beyond this point. From deep behind enemy lines, deep in the heart of the Midwest, it's your host, Andrew Coppins. And it's time for critical thinking.
Welcome in. This is usually a Fish Fry Friday. However, we're changing things up on this edition. We are actually going to have an interview in the second half of the program. I'm Andrew Coppins. He's Pat Oney. You can see it on your screen how to follow us. And if not, go to rumble.com/critical thinking. Watch the show for the love of God. Just watch the show. That's all you need to do. But why don't you let people know who are we interviewing and why?
We are going to be interviewing Mary Taylor. She's the president of Pro-Life Utah. And the reason we're interviewing her is we want to, you know, talk about the end of Roe versus Wade. We want to talk about the future of the pro-life movement and just also address some questions that of the crazy pro-choice crowd I've been getting all week that need to be answered, because too often do they keep blurring the lines of abortion and what is not abortion. And it just, I want to put it into it, essentially.
Speaking and who better of ends, Pat, me, mm-hmm. So I have a double question for you.
Uh-huh.
Because late on Thursday afternoon, we got notice that USC and UCLA were allegedly going to be joining our favorite conference, the Big Ten Conference. Now, by Thursday night, by about 6 o'clock Central Time, 6:30 Central Time, that move is 100% on, official, with both USC and UCLA, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 making their announcements as to what is going on. Yes, it is official as of 2024. USC and UCLA, they add the second biggest media market to the number one media market. In fact, the Big Ten has 6 of the top 7 media markets in the country. Right now, 6 of the top 7, Pat, are in the Big Ten's.
Where's number 7 at?
The Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Okay.
So maybe they add TCU. No, I'm just kidding. They've added USC, UCLA as of 2024. So I have 2 questions. I know we're only supposed to ask 1, but I've got 2 questions. So okay. Number 1 on this is this the end of college football?
Gosh, I hope so. At least of NCAA. Like college football in itself, no, I don't think, no. But maybe the end of the NCAA, that would be fantastic to me.
Why would that be fantastic, though? Because here's the rub, though. The NCAA has nothing to do with FBS football, period.
Oh, okay, fair point. Then let me think about this for a second. No, I don't think it's the end of college football. I think it could be the end of certain conferences in college football. Like, for example, I think the Pac-12 being a Power 5 conference is going to be no longer a thing.
There's a lot to digest there, because I think you're going to see is the Big 12 and the Pac-12 merge.
Eventually, yeah. I think you're likely down to eight
In the Pac-12 at some level here, depending on these moves. I agree. I don't think this is the end, but it definitely is a... This is something that people like you and I, we've grown up for, or we grew up in an era where the Rose Bowl is the Rose Bowl, right?
Right.
Or at least it was. And that has slowly been chipped away.
Oh, this might be the end of that tradition for sure.
Right. And here's what I was going to say, is that this is the end of the tradition that has been college football. But this is not the end of college football. Because, as somebody pointed out, 100 years ago, the forward pass wasn't a damn thing, right? College football has been ever-evolving since it became a thing. It has always been moving and changing. Is the change good or bad? And here's the reality. The change that is happening now is driven by media, because it is the only way in which the NIL money and all of those things that are coming down the pipeline, the professionalization of college athletics, can be sustained. And unfortunately for, you and I, who really love the tradition of college football and also the geographical tradition of college football, those days are done and dusted. How do you, as the Big Ten command $50, $60 million a year for every institution, right? How do you do that? You have to be involved in the biggest media markets that you can. It is why Rutgers and Maryland exist in the Big Ten, right?
Right.
Not because they're great at football. Or now Rutgers is actually pretty good at basketball, ironically.
Yeah, ironically.
But it was never about that. It was about adding the DC metro market and New York and New Jersey, right? That's what that was about. This is also about that, but it is also about the realization that the regionalization of college football is done, right? When Texas and Oklahoma decided to go to the SEC, this was always going to be a thing the Big Ten was going to have to respond to. And this is about as good of a response as you could possibly get, because you have to think that USC is not going to be not USC for very much longer.
Especially adding Lincoln Riley. Right. Yeah.
So you got USC, you've got Ohio State, you've got Michigan, you've got Penn State, you've got Wisconsin, you've got six powerhouse programs, six brand name programs in college football. Brand names, big time brand names. Like, just like in the SEC, you've got Alabama, you've got LSU, now you've got Oklahoma, you've got Texas, Texas A&M. You could also make the argument Florida is in that mix, right? Of these absolute, Tennessee could be in that mix too, of these absolute brand name blue blood programs in college football.
I agree with you all except for one name. I mean, that name is irrelevant. So
you do realize that you wouldn't exist without them, right?
Potentially. Yeah. But, I also want to say that we were their end. So I'll just stick with that.
Okay. Whatever you got to say there, Pat. So yeah. I wanted to ask that question because I think it's important that people understand college football has been ever evolving. Now, what I think it is going to signal, maybe not now, this is going to be the end of the college football bowl system.
And go to more of a playoff system?
Yes, because eventually what is going to have to happen here is that you can't just have a conference champion when you've got 20 teams in a conference, right? Or 16.
Right.
And we'll get into this other question in a bit. But I think the end is in the works for the bowl system. It doesn't make economic sense anymore. You could play exhibition games, right?
Sure.
So you play your 10 conference games, and then you have two exhibition games at the end of the season, or you know, or you shrink down the bowl season, or you make the bowls just part of the playoff system. But I think the days of the Rose Bowl, like, what the hell does a Rose Bowl matter anymore?
It doesn't.
And it feels like it hasn't mattered for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Ever since they went to this rotational championship game inside the Rose Bowl is not the Rose Bowl that we grew up on. Right. Every year, knowing that it's going to be the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. Every year. That's gone. It has been gone for a while. We've just been holding on to it. I would say it's like a
Oh, what the hell?
So my point is that with the tradition not really being the tradition and all of those things, I don't, maybe you can still call them those games or whatever. But the days of, like, if it's not in the college football playoff, then it's those two conference champions or those two conferences. No, those, it's done and dusted. I think you go to a 16 team playoff immediately. Once these conferences have finished this version of realignment, you go to that, at least a 16 team, if not a 24 team, which is what they do, by the way, in FCS.
Right.
And there's where you go, okay, so now you do have a conference championship game, and that conference champion, if you're in the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, and whatever comes out of the Big 12 and Pac-12 situation, right? Those four in that 24 scenario go in, and they get a first round bye.
Well, and the other cool thing about this, because I think you're right, they're going to have to, it's going to force this to happen, and it's needed to happen for a long time, because people get pissed off about, you know, hey, my team didn't get a fair shake, right?
Even at 16, you would still have that, right? And I'm not saying that,
but you'd have more of a fair shake than you do now. Correct. And my point is this, is that you take a 16 team conference, and then you're duking it out to be the top dog of that conference. Anything can happen. I don't care what your preseason polls are. Alabama has dominated those polls for how many years now? Ohio State has dominated those polls for how many years now? All of that might be true, but once you start, you know, adding more teams into that conference, and you do a real conference play, like a real legit conference, especially when you're adding rivals and big power schools like UCLA and USC. Well, USC in football.
UCLA, I think, is getting better, and they've had a really hard time because they're so far in debt athletically.
Right.
That I think this will be the cash injection that they need.
Their basketball programs are usually pretty good, though.
Right.
And my point is this, is that you start adding these teams in, it doesn't matter who's top dog at the end of the season. It matters who's top dog at the end of the season. And you have to go through that grueling schedule. And now that regions no longer really matter, the travel that goes into that too is going to be a factor.
Yeah, I mean, the Big Ten is going to become the very first conference to literally go from coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
Well, I mean, maybe you could say the American did that for a little while.
Who do they have?
Well, I mean, they had UConn, right? So there's one coast. Yeah. And then they had... who do they have out west? Oh, maybe they didn't.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
Yeah, no, they didn't. You're right. Now, anyway, to get back to my second question here. Okay. Is the Big Ten done at adding USC and UCLA? Yes or no?
No. No, I don't think so. I think it depends on who becomes available and who wants to go where. Because if you're right in that this is the end of the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 merges with the Big 12, I could see some of those schools in the Pac-12 still coming and joining the Big Ten. I could even see some schools in the Big 12 leaving the Big 12 to come joining the Big Ten. So
I couldn't, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
because those schools in the Big 12, most of them are not not academically eligible, basically, for the Big 10.
That's true. I guess I'm not taking that into consideration. So you're right in that aspect. That
That's why this whole Texas Oklahoma thing, like, everybody's right. Like, damn it, the Big 10 should have done that, except for they weren't going to take Oklahoma in their terrible academics just to bring Texas into the fold.
Right. I mean, I guess my head just kind of automatically goes like, okay, what teams would be really cool to add to the Big 10?
Okay. So if they're not done at 16, how far do you think they go?
However far the SEC wants to compete. So, if the SEC decides, hey, I want to increase to 20 teams, I guarantee you the Big Ten's going to try to follow suit if they can.
So here's what I think when it comes to that. I think they're not done. I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. They're not done. And they're going to strike that blow at the SEC, and they're moving to 20 teams. It's right. Also logistically the smart thing to do.
Right.
Because it evens out a schedule. You don't have to worry about playing divisions anymore. You can go to a pod system, right?
Right.
And it's so you go five pods, four teams, right? And you kind of set it up like they do in the NFL, right? You play the other three teams in your pod. You play each one of the other four on a rotational basis year by year, right? Mm-hmm. And then right. Let's say you finished with the third best record in your pod. Okay, so then the other three pods that you don't play, you play the team that finished third.
Right. I think that would be a great way to do it. And honestly, while we're on the topic, if we were going to take on more teams, I sincerely hope Utah would be one of them.
I don't know if it would. It would certainly help geographically, at least make a bridge, right?
Right.
Now I know why you hope that, right? So that you can get the Big Ten network, but
that and Ohio State gets to come here every now and again. So
right. The kink in this situation is everybody's looking at Notre Dame as that domino that has to fall. They have to go somewhere at some point here, right? They cannot be that independent anymore. It just doesn't work.
They're going to go to the ACC.
Well, see, here's the problem with that, though. The ACC is likely to be the bones get picked, right? Mm-hmm. So the SEC, if the Big Ten responds, right, where does the SEC go to respond? They have to go to the ACC.
And,
so you look at mm-hmm. maybe adding a Florida State into the mix, a Miami into the mix, right? So mm-hmm. when I'm looking at that, here's the kicker in all of this. Most fans don't know this, but when Notre Dame played that COVID year, basically in an ACC schedule, right?
Right.
They signed an agreement that they would not join any conference for the next 8 years.
Ooh.
Now, here's what we'll talk. Here's $50 million. You don't think the money would talk to the ACC? Here's $50 million, by the way. We're done with that agreement.
I mean, honestly, Notre Dame has more rivals in the Big Ten, I think, than anywhere else.
It really, in terms of its administrative side and stuff like that, fits into the ACC. It really does. But it's kind of straddled both sides, right? It's in the ACC for a lot of things, just not football and hockey, right? Hockey's in the Big Ten. So it straddles both sides. I think ultimately what I would do if I were the Big Ten, my targets are Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
number one, Oregon, number two, because it does bring the football value. Oregon had, I think, the ninth best ratings of all college football games last year. Mm-hmm. Its games were the ninth best rated. That's a top 10 team when it comes to what matters for getting you the most money possible. So there's two of the four. Do you take Washington along with Oregon? I think you do. Seattle's market is Seattle's market, whatever.
Right.
Okay, so now you're left with one other team. Where do you go? You can't go to UNC because UNC and Duke are a total package deal.
Right.
So the only other school that I can think of that I would target would either be Boston College or Florida State.
What about West Virginia?
I don't know. No way in hell. Nope. Not academically there. They fit into the Big 12. They really do in terms of their athletic makeup. That's where they belong. Now I say Florida State because Florida State is a very, very good academic institution.
It is.
It really is. I mean, they've produced a ton of Rhodes Scholars. I also say it from the perspective of there's the history, and it's a name. It's a name brand. If they can get back there, right? So if you add Florida State, you've got Florida State, USC, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, all of those in Wisconsin now, because Wisconsin's been good for 30 years. Like, they're a blue blood program in college football. I mean, that's a reality of the situation here. I mean, you've now planted your flag in being able to recruit even better in the state of Florida. You now get to recruit out west. If you are the Big Ten, these four additions, right? If you were to add Oregon, Washington, Notre Dame, and FSU, you solve all four of the problems that exist in why you would expand. Your television, hang on. It's your television rights, right? It's also your ability to recruit on a national level. And don't forget about that. Because one of the things that people have been talking about for the last 30, or well, not even 30, but the last 20 years, is that the Big Ten in its schools like Purdue, its schools like not even Indiana, but like kind of that mid-level program, right? Why can't they get over that hump? Why can't they start competing with an Ohio State and a Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. It's because schools out the population centers here in the Midwest are shrinking and they're going to the coasts.
Right.
So they're going southeast and west. And now guess what you've done? You've planted your conference flag literally in those hotbeds. It's an amazing recruiting tool. You solved your television rights issues. You've solved your landlocked issues of the Big Ten. You've solved your recruiting issues. Because as much as you would want to say, well, yeah, you can go and recruit like crazy and plant your flag at, XYZ high school in California, it doesn't really matter if they can't see you on TV. It doesn't really matter if mom and dad can never go and see you in a game, right? Or it makes it super difficult. Now it doesn't.
Right. Question, though, on that note, you know, because you talked about tapping in all these different markets and media rights and all that sort of stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the Big Ten's in 6 out of 7. I understand your argument for Florida State. I understand your argument for Notre Dame. I understand those arguments, right? But why wouldn't you go and try to get a Texas school or with someone within that region so that you could tap into that market, too?
Because you're always going to be able to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Purdue. Wisconsin's got like two or three members of their class this year are from Texas. You're always going to be able to. There's so much talent there that it doesn't matter.
Just really curious doesn't. Because
it's not like adding TCU adds anything. Maybe in baseball. That's not a good basketball program.
Yeah, no, they don't have it. That's a joke.
And it's also not a public university, right? I mean, USC is not either, but
what about Texas Tech?
Dear God, no. Nobody wants to go to Lubbock. Are you kidding me? I mean, you might as well just add another Northwestern. Nobody wants to do that.
I mean, no. Northwestern would be one of those teams that I would.
The only school I would have ever considered joining the Big Ten from Texas probably is Texas A&M or Texas.
Neither of those are going to happen. They're in the SEC. So
stay away.
Yeah.
And then you're adding Oregon. You get a cool factor, the name brand factor. Washington's been quietly a hotbed of recruiting lately in the Big Ten.
Well, you also, I don't know if this plays a part because Oregon has, you know, all the Nike stuff, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It is another recent blue blood like Wisconsin. You have to put them in that maybe that secondary category of blue bloods, but they're there. It fires another shot at the SEC, right? What is the SEC going to gobble up? Duke and North Carolina and Miami? Miami and football, is not a name brand program anymore. It is not.
It is not. It hasn't been for at least 15 years now.
All right. On that note, though, Pat, before we go into the B or not the B, though, I think you've got a question for me.
I do have a question for you. I'm going to go with more of the 4th of July route. You know, since that's on Monday, but you know, we're going to do the Declaration of Independence special, and I got to thinking of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. If you could meet one of them, who would it be and why?
See, I think a lot of people's answers would be George Washington, and I would find him to be an absolute boring meet.
Except I don't think he signed the Declaration of Independence, did he? Under Virginia, he's not on here. Everyone thinks he did. I don't think he actually did.
Right. And I was going to point that out, too.
Oh, okay.
That was going to be my second point.
Number one, I didn't mean to like step on your toes there. But
no. Number one, he's super boring, actually.
Right.
And a hard ass. So no, thank you. And then number two, he didn't actually sign. And there's a reason why he didn't sign the Declaration of Independence. Why? Because they had made him the general of the Continental Army at that point.
Right.
So signing that made no sense. I would either go with Thomas Jefferson or John Adams.
Why?
Because they were great thought leaders and absolute titans of intellect. I think it'd be fascinating to be able to meet them and understand, you know, the aura and the essence of who we think they are versus who they really were. And they're one of the few, these are some of the few people on Earth that we really have a great understanding for because of, they wrote everything about their lives down. I mean, the letters between John Adams and Abigail Adams are incredible. I think that would be, I would go with John Adams over Thomas Jefferson, in my view. I think he's one of the greatest players in our foundational setup. So that's who I go with. What about you?
I put a lot of thought into this. It would have to be one of two. It would have to be either Benjamin Franklin or it would have to be Samuel Adams.
Why Samuel Adams? I mean, the beard is great and all, but yeah.
He was part of the Sons of Liberty.
So was John.
Well, yeah, but I mean, wasn't Sam one of the more of the founding members?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and just, I don't know, like I feel like he was just kind of at the forefront of the beginnings of the Revolutionary War. And I don't know. He's always in particular fascinated me. John does too. Don't get me wrong. I was just trying to pick someone that wasn't.
Yeah. Like, and I thought about Benjamin Franklin when you gave me this question earlier. I thought about him too, but at the end of the day, I don't know. I think there are more fascinating people or people that maybe we think we know that we don't.
Don't. Right. And that's true. I promise you, I don't know everybody on this list, but I chose Benjamin Franklin simply because of, I mean, look at his list. Look at his resume, first of all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about cosmopolitan, right?
Right. And the thinker and the inventor that he was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think he would be fascinating to have a conversation with.
Yeah. If I were doing a dinner party, absolutely. Like, he's number one on my list. But yeah, if I had a chance to just meet somebody, I would want to meet somebody like John Adams.
Yeah. And see, and I think that's why I lean towards Samuel Adams. You're kind of one of the sneaky heroes of the American Revolution. And the amount of courage that came out of the Sons of Liberty.
Yeah, I almost put them in like the Apostle Andrew category.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot known. There's enough known. Played a very obviously prominent role. He's one of the 12 freaking apostles, right?
Right.
But yeah, I would put him in that category. That's a really good thought question. But before we get into the interview with Mary from Pro-Life Utah, I think we got to play the bee or not the bee. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Are good you time. Ready?
Nah. About as ready as the Pac-12 was to see USC and UCLA go bye-bye, which was not ready at all.
No, that happened fast.
They didn't see that coming at all.
Mm-mm. Alrighty then. Today's headline, Donald Trump to star in Fast and Furious 10, Capital Riot. Donald Trump to star in Fast and Furious 10, Capital Riot. Is this the B or not the B? That is the question. And I'm actually going to do this today. While you're thinking about that, Andrew Coppins, I'm going to do this. Folks, I know there's been a lot of talk of Roe v. Wade being overturned. I know there's a lot of controversy in that. I know that there are a lot of emotions running high right now. I know there are a lot of young women out there that don't know what to do. That are going through a lot. And I'm here to tell you this. Organizations like Pro-Life Utah are genuinely here to help. They really are. Mm-hmm. They have the resources. They will help you find resources, help you find the help that you need, help you get therapy, help you through your pregnancy. You know, they will help you with all of these things. There are other solutions than just going to a Planned Parenthood and getting an abortion. And there are a lot safer solutions for you and your baby. So if you are in this situation where you're just having a tough time, you need some help, go to ProLifeUtah.com wherever you live, I'm sure there's something within your state that can help you. Bottom line is, make sure that you get the help that you need.
Yeah, 100%. 100% agree.
All right. Donald Trump to star in Fast and Furious 10, Capital Riot. Is this the B or not the B? Andrew Coppins, your answer.
Okay, man. I mean, I feel like this week we've lobbed softballs at each other, but this is definitely the Babylon B.
Are you sure? Because I know you missed one earlier in the week.
Yeah, that's because the lines have been blurred so much. I'm going to go with the Babylon Bee on this one. It's going to be
the final answer.
Final answer.
You would be correct. This is the Babylon Bee.
How long before it actually becomes true?
Oh, it's kind of what my thought process was.
By the way, do you know that they actually have a Google Drive set up with everything that they, like all the prophecies that they made and all of them that have come true?
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. Universal Pictures announced Wednesday that former President Donald J. Trump would be starring in the 10th movie in the long-running Fast and Furious franchise. The upcoming film, tentatively called FF10 Capital Riot, will once again feature Vin Diesel as Dominic Toretto. The film's producers have been tight-lipped about the plot, but did confirm that Trump would grab the wheel from his limo driver and attempt to ram into the Capitol building. Reports also indicate there will be a scene where Trump hijacks a bus and tells the driver he has to drive over 50 miles per hour or it will explode. "It's going to be the greatest movie," Trump told Entertainment Tonight. "We've got a lot of special effects, believe me. We've got got explosions, car wrecks, fog machines, you name it. To tell you the truth, the movie is going to be tremendously fast, unbelievably furious," he continued. This series used to be pretty fast, but now it's just absolutely tremendously fast. Fast like you wouldn't believe. Fast and Furious 10 Capital Riot is expected to begin filming this fall for summer 2023 release.
Oh, man. Now, before we get on to our interview with Mary from Pro-Life Utah, Pat. Here's a newsflash. We are pre-recording this on Thursday night. But literally, Pat, an hour ago. This was said on television.
Sustainable. What do you say to those families who say, listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years. This is just not sustainable.
What you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
Yes, Pat.
Did he just say the not so quiet part out loud?
He literally said it. He literally, the liberal world order is the World Economic Forum's turn of phrase for the NWO.
First of all, are we sure this isn't Wednesday? Because this feels like a WTF Wednesday moment. You had to go there. You just had to go there, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Is Joe Biden like Hulk Hogan to Klaus Schwab and what's his face? Being Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
See, was Ric Flair part of the NWO?
Yeah, at some point in its like nine different iterations, but yeah.
Yeah, so I would have said something more like Ric Flair, but
well, Hulk Hogan was in his like 60s when he was in there.
Yeah, but Joe Biden's just not as
but he tries to be as hip, right?
Right, yeah. Or as buff. And his hairstyle is more like a Ric Flair.
The quiet part out loud. If any of you listening don't understand what we're talking about and why reviving liberty is a very important and vital movement and podcast, for the love of all things holy, believe them when they slip up the liberal world order. What the absolute hell are you talking about? On that note, though.
And joining us now is Mary Taylor, president of Pro-Life Utah. She's joining us to talk about the overturn of Roe versus Wade, along with the future of the pro-life movement. But you know what? I can't, Andrew. Because why? We're guys. We have no say when it comes to abortion. None. None whatsoever. Right? I mean, is that right, Mary? We have no say. It's completely a women's issue.
Oh, you know what? That drives me completely crazy. You men are at least 50% of the equation, right? So, yeah, you have a voice. We're talking about your children. We're talking about your responsibilities. Yes, we are definitely talking about men.
Are you sure? Because we don't get to go through pregnancy.
Yeah, you know what? Nothing drives me crazier than a pro-choice man. You know, we see it all the time at Pro-Life Utah, the women that we help. 9 times out of 10, they are in that abortion clinic because they've been abandoned by their men. The men are pushing them, forcing them to get abortions. Most definitely, this is an issue that affects men and that men are intimately involved in.
Literally and figuratively, yes.
Exactly.
Okay. I see what you're saying, but of course, you know, now that Roe versus Wade is overturned and everything, I mean, abortion still has to be legal on some level, right? I mean, it's still necessary in certain scenarios, isn't it?
No, I wouldn't say so. You know, we can talk about the exceptions, and that's always hard for me to talk about because I have never experienced a rape or incest, for example. Those are heartbreaking situations. All that I can tell you is that if it were my daughter, I would advise her to not try to solve violence with violence. I think that traumatizes women. I think that adds, you know, salt to the wound, really.
But what if they were, say, what if your daughter was 10 or 12 years old?
Yeah, a young girl. That's tough. You know, I won't say there's never a circumstance. If I live to see, you know, 99% of abortions gone, I'll be happy. It's really hard to discuss those situations and to make a decision for somebody else. But I will tell you that, first of all, you know, like I said, with the rape and incest, I don't think that always helps the woman. I think oftentimes, you know, you presented a very extreme case. That's hard to say. But for a lot of women, that's going to be painful. We should at least, at the bare minimum, counsel a woman that may add to her trauma, not help her.
Fair point. Okay, but then what about, say, like an ectopic pregnancy?
Well, an ectopic pregnancy is a whole different thing. That has nothing to do with an abortion. That's a medical problem, and that is solved by a medical procedure.
So, okay. So it's not the same thing.
Not at all.
What about, have you ever heard of like a spontaneous or a missed abortion? What about the cases of those?
So a spontaneous abortion is the medical term for a miscarriage.
Right.
But every bit of legislation concerning abortion clearly defines abortion as the intentional killing of a human being. That has nothing to do with a miscarriage. Again, that's a medical situation solved by a medical procedure and has nothing whatsoever to do with abortion.
Okay, you keep trying to clear up where I'm trying to blur the lines of abortion versus not abortion. This isn't a fair argument anymore, Mary.
Sorry.
So here's a common question I've been getting. What is the line between protecting women's rights and protecting the unborn?
I think that's simple. It's the very same situation that we see in a lot of other scenarios where my rights end where yours begin. So, you know, I'm libertarian at heart. I think you should be able to do anything you want, pretty much, as long as you're not stepping on somebody else's toes, as long as you're not interfering with someone else's rights. And that's the problem with abortion, is we neglect to talk about that innocent human being whose rights are being violated.
Yeah, and Mary, to that point, I think you brought this perfectly into focus, is that I talk about this all the time on the show. You don't have your liberty cannot be something that takes liberty away from somebody else. It ceases to be liberty at that point. And they love to throw that in the pro-abortion side of things. They love throwing that in our face. As a libertarian, right, the position of the party has long been that they're pro-abortion. And so I look at this from the perspective of, well, the Libertarian Party is wrong on this issue. And even within the Libertarian Party, they don't seem to get the concept that this applies to anybody, whether they are fully formed or not.
I don't get that.
You can't pick or choose whom you get to trample their liberty.
Right,
it doesn't
right.
make sense to me. Would I make this argument all the time to some of these pro-abortion libertarians? Would you have been advocating for the position of the U.S. government when a black person was only, what, 3/5 or 3/8 or whatever of a human being?
Right. And there are so many similarities between slavery, the abolition of slavery, where we're at today with abortion, you know, the dehumanizing of a class of people. To to manipulate, to take advantage of, to use that person and abuse their rights. There's so many similarities.
And you also brought up a really important point early in this conversation, because we see a lot of men, especially elite athletes, people with large followings, Dave Portnoy, LeBron James, Kyler Murray from the Arizona Cardinals, all coming out talking about how, you know, what is a man's position and all of these things. And I keep coming back to, it is your position. These people, we have a culture, and we talk about this all the time on our show, the culture of me and the church of me. It is whatever is convenient for me. And for these individuals, what is convenient, right? It is a culture in which I can hook up, I can do whatever I want to do, but because I have money, I have lawyers, I have that whole thing in front of me, and I wanna. There's no responsibility in this culture. There's none. And yeah, we would be better off as a society. You know, it's like, well, what if what you're telling me is then you have to have like responsibility for your activities? Correct. Yes. Yeah. Congratulations. Welcome to the conservative and libertarian position on literally everything. There are consequences. Some of them are good. Some of them can be negative. However, you must prepare yourself for that. There are so many ways, and different faiths have different things to say about ways in which you can protect yourself from not having, you know, if you're not ready, right? There are ways to take a responsible position. And it drives me crazy when I see these types of individuals telling other people this is crazy that men are making this decision for women. It takes two to tango in these scenarios. And so, yes, you do have a say-so. Not so much what happens to the body, but what happens to the decisions that go into creating another life.
Exactly.
Take some responsibility.
Be a man. Just be a man. Stand up. Take care of your child. You know what? If you liked her enough to be sleeping with her, you better like her enough for her to be the mother of your children, because that is a very strong possibility.
But I just swipe right. Right? I just keep swiping. And that's the culture we live in. The culture of I wanna, but no consequences.
Yeah. Well, you know what did that, don't you? Abortion did that.
Absolutely.
The free access to abortion gave men license to do that.
Absolutely. It's the astounding culture. And I come from the world of sports reporting prior to this. So I get the culture that exists around these types of individuals. And you look at Deshaun Watson and the things that are going on there. It just speaks to this lack of responsibility. And that's what I hear when I hear a lot of the pro-abortion arguments here, is that it's because I wanna, or my life is now inconvenienced, or my life is going to change in a way that I didn't plan. Well, here's a newsflash for you. Life is going to do that to you one way or another. And it's how you respond. And the response too often is, this is inconvenient, I'm pushing it away. And we have a culture that advocates for that today. So how do we go forward? What is next for this pro-life movement if we are to advance this position?
Well, we believe at Pro-Life Utah that the most important thing is to provide women with resources, with help and support. I believe that the lack of those kind of things are what paved the way for abortion to become so such a big thing in our society, so common, so accepted, because we didn't have solutions. In 1973, we did not have solutions for a woman who was facing an unplanned pregnancy. And if we don't want to go back there, we cannot let that happen again.
Yeah, and to that point, I go back to this, Pat, we talked about this earlier this week, the meme that's out there in the Catholic Church. Oh, no. You don't care about life. You only care about the life of the unborn, says the church that gives you adoption centers, that gives you food banks, that gives you, you know, XYZ, literally from the cradle to the grave. And we talk about social justice having been a perversion of what the Catholic Church has taught literally for a couple millennia at this point, in that you do have a responsibility to your fellow man and to be responsible and help those who can't help themselves. But you do so out of your own goodwill, not because government is forcing you into action. That's about responsibility. It goes right back to that root, I think, is responsibility and responsibility to help each other. And I think we see that in the Catholic Church. And I think in the pro-life movement, at least in the last 10 years, we have seen that real big light bulb switch of we have to talk about the things that we actually do for the rest of the life, right? And how important it is. We're not talking about just the unborn. We're talking about, okay, so you got a special needs child. There are so many avenues that you can go down. Okay, you've got, a 14-year-old who's pregnant. How do we provide love and care and service until they're on their own feet? How do we do these things to assist people who do need assistance? And I'm so glad that we see it in the pro-life movement because it's always been there, but we've actually put it at the forefront. So how is Pro-Life Utah putting that in the forefront these days?
Yeah, well, you know what? The same as we have in the past. Pro-Life Utah, you may know we began our mobile ultrasound clinic just a little over a year ago, and that has been a very successful project. So we offer free ultrasounds, free pregnancy testing, and then at that point, we invite a woman into our life grant program. We can offer some financial aid, emotional support, some baby supplies. We love to give baby showers to some of the ladies that we work with. Mm-hmm. So we intend to continue that. We know that the need for that is going to be much greater. And so we're inviting all of our partner organizations, churches of every faith, local state governments to partner with us because this is going to be huge. There is going to be a much greater need for these services.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And I think I would encourage anybody who claims the mantle of being pro-life to help, to find a way, whether that's through your church, whether that's through Pro-Life Utah or other organizations that are actually pro-life. That's the other key issue that we see a lot. And we've talked about this in past interviews is that the term big baby that is out there, right? That they've perpetuated the continued grievance, if you will, of the pro-life movement for 20, 30 years here because it was making them money. Now is your time to step up and do something to show your pro-life, not just say it.
I will defend my pro-life community there. I have never seen so much generosity.
Absolutely.
So many people willing to help, wanting to help. So, we need more people to step up because there's going to be more need for support. But in general, the pro-life community is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's more of the lobbying and more of the Washington, D.C. crowd than anything else. But at the grassroots ground level in the states, in those organizations, you see a totally different design and a totally different passion for this movement. So speaking of that, how can people get a hold of you? How can they donate? How can they become involved if they live in the state of Utah, or even if they don't, and they want to find ways to be involved in the pro-life movement going forward?
Right. Our website, prolifeutah.org, Facebook at Pro-Life Utah. Instagram and Twitter, same thing, Pro-Life Utah. This Saturday, we are going to hold an event, and I would invite everybody to come out to that. We are so excited about the overturning of Roe. We've got a fantastic lineup for the very short time that we had to plan this. We will have Senator Dan McKay, who was the sponsor, you may know, of the trigger bill here in Utah, Representative Burgess Owens. We're going to have some musical numbers by Nathan Osmond. It's going to be a really good time. And come out and support us. That would be fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We really greatly appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much to Mary again for joining us. Hopefully you got something out of that interview. Again, Pro Life Utah, check it out online. I'm sure you can find all their social media stuff there. Pat, I wanted to come back to one thing, and I think it's something that I don't talk about very often here, especially, but we talked about responsibility in men. There's also responsibility in life. And what do I mean by that? So I look at the example. Yes, I had two parents, right? I had my mom and dad available to me. But when I was very young, and this is actually in a book, when I was very, very young, my dad was laid off multiple times from his job. He would go to Lambeau Field, collect all of the cans that had been left over in the parking lots right after Packer games, and use that money to buy diapers. That was a one-income household, basically, for the vast majority of the first 3 to 4 years of my life. I was able to not know that, not know the struggles, because they took responsibility, right? And what do I mean by that? Even if you are poor, right? Even if you are the poorest of the poor and you do need some assistance, there's also this level of responsibility that you have to become the provider, that you have to take responsibility for the life that you are creating. And that does mean sacrifice. And that is antithetical, and that's to the point I was making during this interview, is that that is antithetical to today's culture. Sacrifice. That's part of responsibility. You can't do everything that you want to do because you want to do it. There are things that happen in life and decisions that you make that alter the course of your life. Sometimes it's done for you, sometimes it's not, right? Getting into an accident and losing a limb, that alters the course of your life. It changes things. You might have to sacrifice some of the things that you used to love or learn how to do them differently, right? You have to take some responsibility to understand your condition and figure out a way through it. Because nobody, and I mean nobody, is more responsible for your life and the decisions, or more responsible for your life, period, than you. Than you. And too often what we see is, well, it's not going to be easy. I don't want to be a single parent. Then don't be. And what do I mean by that? The responsibility should be for the man to stick around and be part of that child's life, number one. Number two, for you as a parent, how do single parents figure it out? Do they take time where they might need assistance and help and the community helping? Yeah, sure. That might happen. But too often in today's society, we think we have to provide from the cradle to the grave for that child. And that's the double-edged sword I want to get away from, is that we in the pro-life movement also should be believing that the responsibility comes from making decisions that will get you away from that poverty situation. We can educate you on financial responsibilities. We can educate you on those types of things. I look at a bunch of people, you know, that I went to high school with. They figured it out. They got pregnant in high school. And sure, some of it, they had assistance. Some of it, it might be a long play, right? You might have to take, a, you know, 5 years to get a two-year degree or something, right? But you figure it out. Too often, we think that everything must be handed to us. Everything must be an instant gratification. And if it's not instantly there, what do I do? What do I do? You figure it out. So sometimes there needs to be a safety net in place. Sometimes there does. But it must be a temporary. Too often we believe that we have to be the cradle to the grave society. No, we don't. We have to be there to help you through the temporary bumps that happen in life. But you have to take responsibility and understand that your life is not your life anymore when you have a child. Your life is their life. And you have a responsibility now. Sorry you have to grow up, but if my parents, if your parents, if everybody else's parents out there could have, can figure it out, can make sure that you have a life, whether it's hard, whether that's living, you know, in not great conditions for a little bit, or you're living in the Ritz-Carlton. Find your way through the difficulties. There are going to be problems and issues in life, and if you can't deal, you're screwed, period. Too often we talk about that responsibility as a one-way street, the man's responsibility, this responsibility. You become a parent, you are a responsible person. You must be a responsible person. You, not the rest of the community, you. And with that, Pat, final thoughts on the interview with Mary?
You know, I amen to everything you just said, first of all. Color me biased, and you know a little bit about this. I've talked a little bit about this off air. Mm-hmm. I was born 9 weeks early. And I, for all intents and purposes, there's a lot of reason to believe that I shouldn't be here right now. But my parents fought to keep me alive, and thankful to the doctors and stuff as well that did. I'm thankful that I'm here, and I'm able to make decisions, and I'm able to have a life and have the happiness that everyone else gets to have and pursue in life. So yeah. Color me biased, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if I've shared this with you either, because, so I have a, not a similar story to you, but, when I was born, I was born dead. I wasn't alive. The doctor, when they turned me, wrapped the umbilical cord around me and suffocated me. Not on purpose, obviously, but I was born with no breath. I could easily have never have been here. Mm-hmm. So color me biased, right?
Right.
Did my life not matter?
Right.
At that point, I was born not alive.
Right.
And it took, from what I understand of the story, obviously, because I obviously can't remember it. It was 4 or 5 minutes before they knew if I was going to live or not.
Well, I mean, I have cerebral palsy as a result of being born early, mm-hmm. and not having enough oxygen to live on my own yet. So color me biased. I mean, the whole point of this, I'm not saying this as some sob story. I'm saying this is like, I want my children to grow up and to have the same choices in life and to be able to make decisions, to be able to pursue happiness. And I don't want this just for my children. I want this for all children. Mm-hmm. Genuinely want this for everyone. I know there are people out there that have it hard, that are single parents, that I know kids that are orphans because they were, you know, either their parents were killed or maybe they placed them up for adoption, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the system isn't perfect for everyone, but here's my
flash. It's never going to be perfect.
It's never going to be perfect.
Because we're human beings. There's one perfect person in this world, and his name is Jesus Christ.
Right. And killing somebody is not going to be the answer. It can't be the answer. It can't be. Yep. So I just, you know, I know I played a very kind of satirical, kind of funny way of doing an interview with Mary, but really, I mean, these are the questions I get all the time. Anytime I post anything that's even remotely pro-life or about reproductive rights or whatever the case may be, I usually get something, whether it's in my inbox or it's in the comments, doesn't matter. I've even gotten this from my own family. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I can never understand how, unless it may be like a rare circumstance, if my wife is going to be in danger in the pregnancy and it could cost her life. Yeah. Maybe then I could understand it,
but we've talked about this even then, unless it's in a rare window,
right?
A very rare window. Most of the time, there are ways medically to be able to save both.
Right.
Mother and child. The effort should always be life.
Right.
That is it, period. How do I save both lives, if possible? And if there's that impossible scenario in front of you, it's not a it's not an abortion. It is, I'm going to attempt to save both lives. One of them might not live, right? That's how you deal with that. And
right.
That is in the hands of God. That is not in the hands of you or me or necessarily the medical professionals. They work through God and his will. Absolutely they do. Whether they want to believe that or not. But God's will be done.
Amen to that.
And on that I hope everybody has a wonderful, safe, happy, and for the love of God, do not drink, light off fireworks, and hold them in your hand, you morons. Do not do that, please, for the love of God.
And anybody that does might make it on WTF Wednesday next week.
On that note, though, Pat, your final thoughts on this week as we head into the 4th of July Independence Day weekend. And by the way, before we get there, do not forget, we have a very special 4th of July episode next week. It will be pre-taped, but it will air on the 4th of July. It is our ode to the Declaration of Independence, but in a very different way. And your thoughts?
Yeah, don't get lost. Remember who you are. No means no. And happy 4th of July.
Please be safe, be smart, be kind. As always, Matthew 5:47.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.